Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Hello, Rob Greaves here, and welcome to the third and final part of the life and times of Howard Freeman. Howard is a baby boomer, born in 1949. Over the past two programs, we've learnt that he was introduced to the world of popular music and all that that involved at the age of four by his father, who operated a number of dances in and around Melbourne from the years up to and including World War II. As Howard grew up, he became very involved in venue operation, then band management, and finally moved into stage and production management for some of Australia's greatest acts and some of the world's biggest acts, such as Diana Ross, Paul McCartney, The Rolling Stones, Tina Turner, U2, The Moscow Circus, Neil Young, and Luciano Pavarotti, just to name a very small example of those that he's worked with. We've learned that Howard is a committed family man who's devoted to his wife Lil and to his sons, but he's also committed to a quality relationship with all of those that he works with. Although he's now 65, like many of his generation, he enjoys passionately what he does, and although he's beginning to feel the results of all the years that he's worked, he plans to keep on for as long as he can, because he also has a deep desire to make certain that a new, younger generation of stage, backstage, and program managers are properly equipped to keep the live music and live performance industry vibrant. There's no time for boredom in his life and none in his story. We pick up now with Howard talking about the current state of Live Australia music. Obviously, the international music scene is very strong and at the moment very healthy. How do you see the Australian music scene? Is it the same?
No, it's absolutely totally different. I mean, in the 70s, 80s, and even up to the 90s, if you had a band here and left Melbourne, you could play in out of Melbourne, Wangaratta, Albury, Canberra, you know, out of Sydney, Sydney Central, Sydney North, North Coast, up to Byron, Gosford, Byron. You know, you can do 30 gigs between here and Brisbane.
So what's changed?
The venues aren't there anymore. The clubs have changed. The venues have gone to pokies, you know. It's one of those things where if you're running a venue and you have live music, you're not going to win on every act. Now, if you're a regional venue and you have, say, a band on a Saturday night, say there's 52 shows a year, if you lose on 30 of those and make on 22, what's the point?
Yes.
You know, so if you're in the business of selling booze and food and whatever, by doing live music and having kids around and hooning in cars and pissheads walking home, you alienate part of that local community.
Of course.
The local community is probably happier to have nanas popping their 20-cent coins in poker machines. And it's probably a better value for that establishment anyway, you know.
It seems to reflect, though, a community attitude towards music as though it's not all that important if people are happy to accept this degeneration, if you can put it that way, of live music.
Yeah, it's hard too. It's the gentrification of cities, you know.
Yes.
You have a look at the inner city venues that have been there for years and now they're surrounded by apartments that we can't afford to live in.
Yeah.
You know, where people are bitching about the noise. Well, hang on. If you bought a house beside a freeway, there's going to be some noise there. You know, you buy a house beside a gig, that's what it is. You know, it's not like it goes till 3 or 4 or 5 in the morning. Most venues' curfews are 11 or midnight, you know.
So you'd be in support of I think New South Wales have done it. I think they have. Victoria are about to move into this where if there's an existing live music venue,
absolutely,
people can't come in and complain about it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Suck it up. You know, you buy a house under the flight path, there's a plane going over.
Yes.
You know, that's why you got the house cheap.
Australia, particularly Melbourne, really was a very vibrant music city in the 60s and 70s. And it added a lot, not just in terms of the music scene, but a whole lot of range of side things. You know, you've got the musical equipment business, you've got catering, you've got everything else. It must be actually rippling down all those other industries now, this lack of live music. There must be a lot of people suffering from this.
Yeah, I would think so. I would even the fact of music, you used to have to wait till the act you loved put their product out. Now you can go online and find it. It's instant gratification now on so many levels, where before it was exciting to know in 14 days that that album would be coming out and you'd be queuing up for it and you'd be at the record store. Now the record store doesn't exist because there's no point.
Yeah.
So you go online and it's almost, it's so instant gratification that the satisfaction from it doesn't last as long. So the turnover is greater. The kids' access to artists is through shows like X Factor or live talent shows.
Which are fairly manufactured.
Which are just, let's put a handle on it. I mean, where are these people from? What have they done? What's their journey? Do they want to make a living out of it? You know, there's so many young kids out there, so many bands out there. There's so many different areas of music now that it's really hard to define where they're all going to get a break, you know?
Why do you think music is important as to Australians? Why is music important to us?
It's a basic reflection of the society you live in. You know, I mean, the whole California thing, the hippie thing, that was one era. The English thing was a little bit more upright, a little bit more poppy, a little bit more introspective. You know, you look at the Kinks lyrics versus the Eagles lyrics. The Kinks are, you know, probably the greatest songwriters that ever lived. Ray Davies, unbelievable songwriter. I think the Australian thing, it started out being so influenced by England, where New Zealand bands had Radio Hierarchy and they had so much access to English music. Australia didn't. Australia was a bit removed. New Zealand bands came over. They shared some stuff. The R&R thing brought a lot of black bass music into Sydney. So then the rhythm and blues thing really started. And out of that, people, instead of playing cover versions of overseas releases, started writing their own songs. And then you have a look at the Australian genre. Look at Paul Kelly. Look at, not so much, I would guess Split Enz, even though they're New Zealand. You know, Midnight Oil. All
those
people,
we always claim New Zealand as our
Australian crawl. You know, I mean, all those acts are so significantly Australian, from the way they're structured to the lyric to how they set the music up. I mean, there's some really groundbreaking stuff here. Men at Work, you know, another one.
So there really is quite a cultural element to all of this.
Absolutely.
And would you agree then that we're going to lose that if we don't do something about keeping music live in Australia?
Your music's got to be live. I mean, how else do you get your jollies, you know? If you're a performer, the only thing that's going to give you satisfaction is looking and eyeballing the guy in the front row. Then you'd know whether your song works or not.
Well, why do you think it is that, without being political on any given political party, why do you think it is that governments are prepared to put money into opera and classical music, but not into popular cultural music?
It's their generational thing. It's the accepted thing. It's the society says that's acceptable. Whether I think governments are still a little bit scared of popular music because it can be insightful. It can be, it can create havoc.
Which is what they were saying back when rock and roll started.
Yeah,
in the 50s,
absolutely.
Weren't they? And here we are, 60 years later, and we're still suffering.
Yeah, everybody's going to die from it. You know, nobody did. Come on.
These men come down here from New York and from Florida to find out my reasons on rock and roll music and why I preach against it, and I believe with all of my heart that it is a contributing factor to our juvenile delinquency of today. I 100% believe it. Why I believe that is because I know how it feels when you sing it. I know what it does to you. And I know the evil feeling that you feel when you sing it.
In 1964, rock's most popular group of all time came singing I Want to Hold Your Hand. And after the world's youth gave their hand to them, they took them on a journey into drugs, permissive sex, Eastern mysticism, and Satanism.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you something I think you'll understand. And I say that something I wanna hold your hand. feel happy inside. It's such a feeling that my love.
Listen to older voices, the magic of memories.
You know, it's expression, it's freedom of expression, and I think some people are scared of that. I mean, you know, look at the girl band in Moscow that got jailed. What a Pussycat Riot or whatever they were. You know, how obscene is that?
Yes.
The chicks are making a statement.
Yes.
You know, it shows there's no freedom.
Now, I would think that by now people listening would have gathered that music is not just a critical element of your life, it's been a major part of your life. But other things go on around you other than music. When you look at the world at large at the moment, what are the things that concern you as a father with kids and probably grandchildren coming into this world?
Things that concern me are is greed. That there's so much of this planet just being raped and pillaged for short-term gain. You know, the deforestation, you know, the palm oil plantations, the overfishing, you know, cutting fins off sharks to make soup, taking horns off rhinos for medicine that doesn't work anyway. It's all based on greed. Everybody should pull back a bit and just suck it up and be happy with what they've got, you know. It's wrong.
It's, you say it's wrong, but how do we actually bring about those changes?
I don't know. I think that... It's also a generational thing. You go back to your parents or your grandparents, and your grandparents had a radio on the mantelpiece. They didn't have a TV. They chopped the wood to put in the fire. They washed the clothes in the boiler, you know. But now it's all about me. I think people have just got to embrace other people and do things.
It sounds as though what you've identified there is a thing about valuing things.
Absolutely.
That, you know, if we can call it the older times, where, as you said, when people chopped their wood, had to stoke a fire, had to do things for themselves. They learnt the value of all of that.
Yeah.
And today it's all sort of.
And it's satisfying doing that too.
Yes. So how do you try, or how did you try and encourage your children to develop values and see the value in things?
I think the first time they ever saw a McDonald's, I'd drive them to Andrew's Hamburgers in Middle Park and said, this is a hamburger, the other one's shit. When they talked about drugs and we talked about drugs and... You go, heroin, I'll show you what heroin does. You drive to Rove Street and look in that hooker's eyes. You know, that's a vacant person right there.
Did you do that with your kids?
Absolutely.
That's quite a remarkable thing. Not many parents would take that trouble.
Well, you know, you get one life. It's not a rehearsal, so you've got to be real about it.
Right.
You know, and I think they get it as well. I mean, one day Paul was coming home from either school or uni or something, and he was really late and he came through the door and I was just yelling at him, going, where the f*** do you think you've been? And he said, I helped this woman with the shopping on the way home. And I went, bullshit, you've been hours. He went, do you know how slow a 90-year-old woman walks? And then I got a little tear in my eye because those qualities showed.
Yeah.
You know, that training came through.
Yes.
That he actually helped someone that was struggling. Copped it on the chin when I gave him a verbal when he got home. And then I felt like the absolute, because I'd already caned him, you know. But was so proud in the same sentence. You know, and that's the thing. And I mean, I got in a train one day and it's full of citizens wearing suits and ties. Got to Ringwood and this old lady gets on with a shopping trolley. I stand up and offer him a seat and she goes, no, I'm all right, love. And I go, no, have the seat. And as I walk over to her to give her a hand with the trolley, a guy in a suit sits in the seat. So I went back there and I just grabbed him by the ear and said, if I'm not sitting there and she's not sitting there, you're certainly not sitting there, and picked him up by the ear and made her sit in the seat. And she was really embarrassed about it, you know.
But I
was
like, yeah.
How dare you? You
exactly.
know?
Exactly.
You know, where's the respect for the aged or the infirmed or the pregnant woman or the, you know, even, you know, the handicapped or the kid that can't, you know, who's new here and can't speak English and looks a bit confused? Give him a hand.
Well,
you know?
We talked about values in lifestyle, and you've just raised another word there. That's the word of respect.
Yeah.
Would you agree that that seems to be seriously lacking in our society today?
Yeah, I think the Americanization of Australia is we're paying a high price for that.
We certainly gained some things, but we've lost a lot as well, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we've only got to look at the the destruction of things around us, whether it's graffiti or people just, you know, ripping things apart around us, that does seem to suggest a total lack of respect. Does that start in the home as well?
Yeah, you would think so. A mate of mine's a copper, and he goes to a lot of domestic situations, and he walks into places and sees kids that are 9, 10, 11, 12 years old who've never had a home-cooked meal, who've lived on takeaway their whole lives, you know, because the parents are too lazy or too drugged or too, you know. But it's indulgence again. It's greed again. It's greed of what you want.
Yes.
You know, it's, again, instant gratification, you know, whether you have a jab in the arm or take a pill or whatever you do, you know. I think we've lost a lot, and the ice epidemic is going to rip the arse out of this society real soon. It's out there and it's killing country towns. It's frightening.
But again, I don't look to you as having the answers to everything, but if there are so many people out there in our society looking at this and not knowing what to do about it, what hope have we got?
I think the hope we've got is ourselves.
Each one of us takes some responsibility.
Absolutely. There's always a voice. There's always somebody who's going to go, I've had enough of this shit, and five people will stand up and go, so have we. You know? I don't think that evil will ever overcome goodness, you know, because people will go, I'm not having it, you know? And, I mean, you know, you look at the country town thing and the ice epidemic, it's based on people selling a product, making a lot of money, getting people addicted, you know. It's greed again. Okay, well, go and get those that are selling it, strip them of every asset they've got, take their dignity away because they've taken other people's. Let it impact on their families the way it impacts on the family of the user.
Well, where do you stand on the issue of the way courts handle the situation? It seems to me the police are out there trying to do the best they can, and they drag people in front of the courts and there's almost no consequences.
I just think it's so soft. I mean, anyone that goes to court and goes, I was abused as a child, I have a drug habit, I'm something, suddenly you get three ticks against your name and suddenly you're on a community-based corrections order or whatever, you know? I mean, do the crime, do the time. You know, I grew up in an era where if you're a bad boy, the cop will give you a clip over the ear and a boot up the arse. And now, if a cop asks a kid for his name and address, the kid will go, I know my rights, fuck off, I'm not telling you. Yes. And they actually say that.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So in our desire to have an open and free society, we've probably gone way too far?
Absolutely. You know, I think we've cotton-wooled kids, we've cotton-wooled society, you know. We've tried to be too nice for too long. There's actions and reactions. And if the action you have is soft, the reaction is going to be soft as well, you know. I don't agree with jailing everybody for every crime.
Of course,
you know, there's elements, but when you know, the dual mar thing, you know, a guy who's out on parole can do that.
Yes.
You know, the Rosie Batty, you know, how's she feel every day she wakes up?
And it's almost,
you know,
like the
how's the court system looking now? You know,
well, that's right. The perpetrator's the one they seem to be looking after and protecting.
Yeah, you know,
not the victims.
And I mean, I tell you, there's people out there, there's criminals out there, ain't going to be rehabilitated ever.
Yeah.
There's young guys out there want to be gangsters, and they're going to be gangsters, you know?
Yeah.
And they're never going to be nice guys. They're always going to be gangsters because, you know, they think they're living an episode of The Sopranos.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices. Turning back time. Turning back time. Turning back time.
Sixty-five years of age, that's a good age, but you've got, short of that bus hitting you, many, many more years left in your life. What would you do, what would you like to do with the next 30 or so years of your life?
I'd really like to see another generation of production people come through. I mean, I'm taking it upon myself to try and nominate and find and enthuse and build the next generation of production managers in this country. I'm earmarking kids now. I mean, my son is one of them because I probably treat him harsher than I would treat anyone else, but he actually has the grunt. He has the ability to do it. There was another young kid, Brett, who I took on Soundwave last year, and just sort of the last show before we went to Perth. I have a production case which has got an office in it and tools and probably $5,000 to $8,000 worth of toys, you know, and yeah. It's a case that's as tall as I am, twice as wide as I am, and five drawers and bits and pieces in it. I said to Brett, are you serious about making a living out of this industry? And he went, yeah, I really want to. So I just said, put your name on that case.
Amazing.
Now, that kid has since then has worked at Gladstonebury. He's worked at other festivals around the world. He's coming back. He's going to do Soundwaves again this year. Maybe he picks up the slack, you know, as I disintegrate and fall into the distant light. Maybe he's the spark that comes up the other side, you know, and maybe some of the values that I've tried to teach them in the way you treat people and the way you put shows together is lives on. That's all you can do.
As somebody who was born basically post-Second World War, just after the Second World War, right through to now, you have seen some amazing changes both in society and technology. I mean, we've gone from
absolutely
from basic valves to who knows where now.
Yeah.
What's had the biggest impact on your life in terms of the changes? What has really stuck with you or has affected you?
I think the use of the video component in shows has been a major.
So the development of video?
Video has been a major. The development of audio and lighting components, the development of moving lights has brought a whole nother colour and dimension to shows. Video presentation is now just amazing. I mean, if you can run a festival for DJs where reality is there's a guy with two turntables in front of him, there's 30,000 people out the front, what are they looking at? They're looking at the video content.
Right.
You know? Right. So that's it. It's like they're sitting in front of a giant TV with some wanker with a couple of turntables and they're getting off on it.
Because of the quality of what they're watching.
Absolutely.
Is that somewhat supplanting this whole thing of live music we were talking to, or do you think it's a valid...
It's another level of the live entertainment industry.
Right.
It's all part of it.
Right.
You know, if you can't... You've got to say that rap and everything else, it's all joined. It's all an expression of self, you know?
Our time is almost up. We've covered a lot of ground, but by gee, in an hour we could not possibly cover all the things that you've seen, done, wanted to see, wanted to do. What sort of things that we haven't covered do you think we should share at this moment? What would you like to finish up with?
I just hope live music keeps as strong as it is. I really hope that people that fall through the cracks in this industry, I mean, from my side, working as a production manager, I deal with a lot of crew guys who, when their bodies break or their mentality breaks, they're just cast aside. And the suicide rates and the attrition rates amongst the soldiers of rock are probably higher than the police force.
And there's no superannuation, is there?
And there's no super, and you bust your ass, and you're hot when you're hot, and as soon as you break, you're not, you know. And there's guys who are great guys that were integral to the success of this whole industry, living in sad rooms above pubs, miking up a band twice a week, you know. There's some sad stories out there. You know, I mean, there's people that have indulged in drugs to get through their lives and now the drugs have made them the victim and they're not coming back. And there's people that have tried to beat those problems and they're fighting hard, but they've got no other support, you know, because... Basically, you alienate yourself from your family during that journey.
If I'm a young person listening to this, that doesn't sound like it's encouraging me to participate in the music business.
Yeah, but the sense of worth and the sense of self and the sense of family and the sense of satisfaction is so much higher. The downs are so much further down, but the highs are so much higher that the reality, when you level that out, it's an incredible journey. It's really worthwhile. It's a journey of self-expression. It's a journey of growth. It's a journey of joy. It's a journey of sharing. It's a journey of community. And that's the part that blows me out still is that when you go out and you go out with a team of 8 or 10 or 12 guys, you are family. You are community. You are together. It's just a joyous thing to behold.
And your journey's not over yet, is it?
Oh, no way.
How long do you think you can survive in this business?
As long as I can stand up. That's like I said, I went to the gym this morning and I go to the gym a few times a week because at 65, I still jump in the back of the truck with 20-year-old kids, you know, because I watch people that haven't unloaded that cabinet from that height. I go, you know, you're going to break an arm, you're going to snap your leg, you're going to do something. So here's the way to do it. And then I climb out again because I haven't got the petrol in the tank to spend 2.5 hours in the back of a truck anymore. You know, I'll have a crack.
So for you, going to something like the gym at the moment is very important in terms of keeping your body together?
Yeah. What's left of it.
What's left of it.
Yeah. I mean, I smoke, I drink, you know, like everybody else. I fart, I stand up. It's a very physical lifestyle. I mean, I can go and do production manager on a festival and walk 40K during that day. I mean, I do an indoor show. I do the Brisbane Entertainment Centre, a Rod Laver, and I wear a pedometer and I do 18K. I've never left the building.
So you're very fit. You have to be.
I don't know. I'm reasonable.
You're reasonable.
Yeah.
Howard, thank you very much, not just for sharing some of your story with us, but actually for helping to educate, because a lot of things you've spoken about, I don't think most people in the community have ever thought about, let alone understand. And you've given us a perspective, not just on the music industry, but on the importance of music to Australia. So thank you very much for being on the program, and good luck in the future.
Thank you. And it's billions of dollars that nobody ever realises that we're punching into the economy. It's a major, major industry that's never recognised for what it is or it's worth.
Well, let's hope that that does change one day.
We hope so.
Thank you, Howard.
Good on you. Cheers.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.